You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi there. Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show, Outsmart Emotional Eating. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin. I am a psychoanalyst specializing in eating disorders, and I know what it's like to struggle because I had all the eating disorders myself. I unlocked the secrets and liberated myself from emotional eating, and now I have a healthy and balanced relationship with food. And on this show, I am dedicated to guiding you on a journey to a binge-free, happy life. So today, we're going to talk about tips and strategies for a stress-free holiday meal. Because during this time of Easter and Passover, happy Passover, everyone. Tonight's the first night, and Easter is this Sunday. Many people are looking forward to celebrating those holidays with their families and with their friends. Yet for those who struggle with food, those celebrations can be overwhelming and upsetting. Oh, also this month is the holy month of Ramadan for Muslims. It's a month of fasting during the day, which can be a trigger also because restricting can lead to binging. So no matter what holiday you celebrate, these meals are challenging because food plays a center role. Food is center stage to all of this. And meals with family can create anxiety. They can create stress on many levels. And if you're thinking about chocolate bunnies and matzah, that can trigger feelings of guilt and fear about overeating. It can trigger binging. It can trigger fear of gaining weight. It's really problematic. And these gatherings can also trigger memories of difficult past experiences with the people around the table or with food, and it can bring up tensions about unprocessed relationships. There's also pressure to meet social and familial expectations. It creates stress and anxiety, which leads to food for comfort. Also, family members can unknowingly, or sometimes knowingly, contribute to this anxiety by making comments or judgments about food choices or weight. It creates a real toxic environment for people who are struggling with food. So the combination of all these factors, it's a lot, can make holidays a really difficult time. And it can lead to emotional eating as a way of coping. So I have some suggestions for how to make this time free of stress and also free of binging. So here we go. By the way, if you are listening to this on the radio, the call-in number is 323-203-0815. If I have time, I will open up the phone lines and you can ask me anything about this topic or anything else. 323-203-0815. If you are on Instagram, feel free to drop a comment in the comment box. Or you know, any question or comment, I'm really interested in what you have to say. All right, so here are some suggestions for how to make these holiday meals a little bit easier. First, don't restrict food before a meal. Very important. The temptation of all the delicious food you know you're going to have later creates such a fear of overeating, and it leads many people to restrict their food intake before the meal. Like, oh, I'm going to save my calories and therefore I won't worry about it when I actually eat Passover dinner or at the Seder or at Easter brunch or whatever. But this approach backfires. Restricting food before a holiday meal actually is counterproductive for both physiological reasons and psychological reasons. So first, physiology of it. If you don't eat all day, you get so hungry, so starving, so ravenous that by the time you actually sit down to eat, you end up eating more because you're so hungry. Also, from a psychological perspective, we want what we think we cannot have. So eventually our willpower fails and we tell ourselves, I'm not going to eat. I'm not going to eat that. I'm not going to eat any chocolate bunnies. I'm not going to eat any chocolate covered matzah, whatever it is. Eventually, your willpower fails and you end up overeating or binging. which leads to a sense of hopelessness, leads to a sense of failure, making it even harder to break the cycle of binge eating disorder. Because when we feel bad about ourselves and we beat ourselves up, oh my God, I can't believe I ate that. Or we talk to ourselves like, oh, I can't believe you ate that. You have no willpower. You're gross. You're all the terrible things that we say to ourselves and we feel bad. And then what do? Well, if you can't simultaneously make yourself feel bad and make yourself feel better. So often it leads to food for comfort. So it's a vicious cycle. And it's hard to break it, but it is possible to break it when you know what the problem is. The problem is not food. The problem is your attitude towards yourself and toward whatever it is that you're eating. So let's learn to approach the holiday meals with a mindset of a balance and self-care. How do we do that? Well, it means allowing yourself, easier said than done, allowing yourself to enjoy the food, enjoy the festivities without restriction or deprivation. It is easier said than done, but it is possible, really is possible. So let me give you some tips on how to feel safe around food, because food can be scary, especially with these big holiday meals. So instead of focusing on restriction and deprivation, approach holiday meals without restriction. Give yourself permission to eat what you want, which will make it easier to stop when you are full without stressing out. One way to do that, again, is to so don't starve yourself beforehand. Don't get to the point where you're so hungry, you're going to eat everything. And give yourself permission to have it, which doesn't mean binge on it, doesn't mean overeat it. It just means have it, have some. And mindful eating is a way that you can do this. And what is mindful eating? It means paying attention to your hunger and fullness cues and allowing yourself to actually enjoy food instead of feeling so guilty. And of course, for everyone who struggles with emotional eating, this is really challenging. Like, it makes sense, right? It sounds good. Oh, I'll just eat mindfully. I'll just give myself permission to have whatever. Yeah, it doesn't work that way. It is hard. I fully recognize that. But I want to give you some strategies on how to cultivate a mindful mindset. So first, slow down. Slow down. Instead of rushing or furtively eating, you know, that sort of sneaky eating thing, take your time. Reflect on how this food actually tastes. Consider whether it is delicious or not. I've had so many people who, when they do this, they realize, oh, it really isn't as good as I think it is. You know, one person was just, she just was like addicted to Snickers, or so she felt, addicted to Snickers. She was really addicted to using Snickers to avoid certain emotional states and to comfort herself and all the things. But when she actually slowed down and took a bite of a Snickers bar and really savored it or tried to, she realized that it wasn't as good as it was in her mind. And when she was like scarfing them down and binging on them, she wasn't really tasting them fully. So give yourself the opportunity to taste that thing instead of, oh, I can't have that. Oh, I want it. See what it's like to taste it. See what it tastes like. Is it good? Is that chocolate bunny actually good? Or is it that kind of gross plasticky kind of chocolate? As a lot of them are, unfortunately. So take a moment to reflect on the tastiness of whatever it is that you're eating. Notice your hunger and fullness cues. One way to do that is create a little scale for yourself. On a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being 0 to 5, 0 being I am not hungry at all, 5 being I am ravenously starving and will eat anything because I am that hungry and I'm going to just pass out if I don't have something. Where are you? Are you a little hungry? Are you maybe a 1 or a 2? Are you pretty hungry? Are you kind of starving? Are you 3 or a 4? Try to stay around, you know, get to around 2. Don't get any hungrier than like, you know, a 3. So really pay attention to how hungry are you? And also, how full are you? So zero is I am, I'm still hungry. And a five is I'm uncomfortably full. So, you know, a two, a three is, okay, I'm satisfied. I feel good. I don't have too much. I don't have that icky, I've eaten too much feeling, and I'm not hungry. So really, really pay attention to the scale and gauge how hungry are you and how full are you. Start tapping into your body more. And just check in with your body before, during, and after you eat to see how hungry you are and how satisfied you are. Also, be present. Pay attention to your thoughts and your feelings as you're eating. Notice, are you feeling anxious? Are you feeling stressed? Are you having an emotional experience as you're eating? Try to be present with those without judgment. Just notice, be an observer of your own experience. Oh, okay. I'm sitting here across from my mother and I'm feeling very anxious, right? or I'm feeling very happy, whatever it is. You just notice what your actual emotional experience is as you're eating. Are you eating to avoid something or distract yourself, comfort yourself, soothe yourself? What's going on in that moment with you? What are you thinking? What are you feeling? Be very present about what you're experiencing and practice self-compassion. Be kind and encouraging to yourself. Remember, emotional eating is not really about food. It is a way of coping that involves food. It involves eating for comfort, distraction, to escape, to celebrate, all the things. So when you really look at it compassionately, you know, okay, why do I feel an irresistible pull towards those chocolate eggs? Is it because I never allow myself to have them and I want them? Is it because I'd rather focus on that than focus on what's going on around me? What's going on with me? Be curious. Also, along with practicing self-compassion, be a friend to yourself. Consider what you'd say to a friend who was feeling self-conscious or worried about being with her family or worried about losing control of her food. Or like, why make that just one gender? You know, what would you say to a friend if he were feeling this way or they were feeling this way? We're all inclusive here. Give yourself the validation, the acknowledgement, and the support that you would give anyone else. If someone else was like, oh my God, I really want to eat those chocolate Easter eggs, but I shouldn't, I can't, I want to. You wouldn't be like, what is wrong with you? You have no control, no willpower. You suck. Like maybe you say to yourself, you'd say, okay, no big deal. What's going on? Why? Like, why do you think you want? Like you'd be curious. So be curious with yourself. So important. All right. So those are some tips on how to deal with food on this holiday, time, at this holiday time, or any time actually. Here are some tips on how to feel safer with people. All right, family members. Family members can be triggering, especially if you're struggling with a binge eating disorder, because family gatherings involve large meals, they involve traditional foods, they involve social pressure to participate in these eating rituals. And family dynamics can be really complicated and uncomfortable. Understatement. There are undercurrents, right? There are often undercurrents of unspoken expectation, unresolved conflicts, emotional triggers, all of which can really increase your stress, increase your anxiety, make you just feel horrible while you're sitting at this table where you're supposed to be having such a good time. No pressure. If you're struggling with food, this is a perfect storm of awfulness, a perfect storm of triggers that lead to binge eating as a way of coping. Family members can also make comments about what you're eating or what you're not eating, or they can make comments about your appearance, your body, which makes you uncomfortable, resentful, self-conscious, and sad, and more, all of which contributes to emotional eating. So it's important to be aware of these triggers and to have strategies in place to cope with them in a healthy way. And here are the tips I just promised you on how to feel safer with people during these holiday meals. First, be clear, be direct. In other words, set limits. So when you are setting limits and setting boundaries, it's really important to be clear and direct about what you're comfortable with and what you're not. So, example, if someone makes a hurtful comment about your weight or your appearance, and then they justify it by saying they're just worried about your health. It's a good one, right? Oh, no, I'm just worried about your health. How can you possibly be offended? I'm just worried about you. I am just concerned. Well, you say this. You say, I understand your concern. I understand your concern. Yeah. But comments about my weight are not helpful and they make me uncomfortable. So I would appreciate it if we could focus on other topics. Very clean, very concise, very to the point. There's not much they can say. Oh, but I'm just worried about your health. That does not give anyone a free pass to say nasty things about your weight or your appearance. So just, yep, I understand your concern, but no. Also use I statements. Using I statements communicates your needs without blaming or attacking the other person or making them feel blamed or attacked. So instead of saying, you know, you always ruin family gatherings with your negativity and picking on me or whatever, you could say, you know, I feel upset when you make negative comments during these family gatherings. I'd appreciate it if we could keep the conversation positive. This is for whether someone's being negative just in general, not necessarily attacking you, but it works for both instances. Someone's being negative, it doesn't help to say, you're being so negative. It helps to say, you know, when you make these comments, I feel upset and triggered. I'd appreciate it if we can stay more positive. I. It's not being narcissistic. It's being clear. Also, set boundaries. Setting boundaries helps you protect your emotional well-being. It helps protect you from difficult family members who cross the line. For example, if they're just being nosy or they're just asking questions you don't want to answer or it's just none of their business, you could say, you know what? I'm not comfortable discussing my personal life right now. Or you could just kind of get out of there by saying, you know what? I need some time to recharge. I'll join the group later. Or you know what? I need to go to the restroom. Like just set boundaries. If that boundary includes just leaving, oh, there's something in my contacts. I'll be right back. That's a good one. Or, I got to go to the bathroom. No one's going to be like, no, you don't. Let's stay here and let's keep talking. No, remove yourself from the situation. Set boundaries. Be clear. Use I statements. And also practice active listening. So active listening means focusing on the other person's perspective and validating their feelings, even if you don't agree with them. But it's a way to stop a conversation from escalating. So if someone is upset because you won't try just one piece of their famous Easter cake or one of their Passover cookies, and they just say, oh, one bite won't hurt you, just have some. First, speak to their emotions. Instead of like, no, I'm good. I really don't want your Passover cookie. I don't want the Easter cake. No. Then they're just going to be like, oh, yes. And it's going to be a thing. And then you're going to feel guilty and give in, or you're going to give in and then feel guilty. Either way, guilt is involved. So instead, active listening is, I understand you're upset. You really want me to taste your food, but, and here are some options on how you finish that sentence. So first you validate, I know you're upset. I know you really want me to try some. I see that. I'm sure it's fabulous, But I'm trying to listen to my body and eat what's right for me, what feels good for my body right now. And right now, my body is not saying that I need Easter cake. I know you want me to try that. I know you want me to try your homemade chocolate covered matzah, but I'm working on building a healthy relationship with food right now. And that means making choices that feel right to me. So, you know, not right now. Or I know you want me to try that, but I'm not comfortable eating that right now. I appreciate you understanding. Clean, clear boundaries. Also, seek support. Seek support. It is so important to have a support system in place to help you navigate difficult family dynamics. That can include friends, a therapist, a support group, a coach, anyone who can offer you emotional support and practical advice on how to cope with difficult family members, or just listen and validate your experience is so helpful, so that you don't feel alone in the experience. And so that when other people also share their experiences, they feel understood and you can support and encourage each other. It's so helpful. It's so helpful to have that tribe of people who get it and who are there for you and with you. Also, focus on the spirit of the holidays. Instead of focusing on food, let's focus on the spirit of the holidays. Because guess what? If aliens landed on Earth, they might get the impression that Easter is a celebration of chocolate bunnies, egg hunts, and Easter baskets. Or that Passover involves matzah, 4 glasses minimum of wine, and a lot of hand washing and eating of weird things. And these celebrations, along with other religious and spiritual holidays, are about much more than food. And so one way of minimizing the stress around holiday meals is to consider the theme of the holidays. What themes are embedded in these holidays that can apply to our modern lives, to our lives? One of them is gratitude. The season, it encourages us to be grateful for what we have and to appreciate the blessings in our lives. The holidays encourage us to give thanks for the blessings in our lives, to recognize the hard work and sacrifices of previous generations that made our current freedoms and opportunities possible. Now, I just want to be clear, when I say gratitude, I don't mean gratitude as a way of nullifying painful emotions. This is not weaponizing gratitude to nullify pain. And because often I hear this all the time. People will say, I felt so sad and so angry because of these particular circumstances, but I shouldn't feel this. I should be so grateful for what I have. No. You should feel that, because being grateful has nothing to do with feeling sad and upset for situations that are happening to you in your life. You want to be able to hold gratitude and have appreciation for the blessings in your life. Absolutely, that is so important. But without using gratitude as a way of diminishing or minimizing the painful, difficult parts of your life. Those need your attention. They need you to take them seriously. They need you to be responsive. You need to be kind and responsive and honor what you are feeling while also feeling grateful for what you have. The example I like to give is a person. This actually happened some years ago. This person got in a car accident and no one was hurt, but car got really mangled and she had to deal with dealing with the insurance and getting it to the body shop and renting a car and all the things. And she was, legitimately, of course, complaining about all of this because it really disrupted her life. And then she said, oh my God, I have no right to complain. Like, some people don't have cars. That's true. I should be grateful for just having a car. Okay. But what she just did was try to nullify the reality of what she was going through, The fact that other people don't have cars and she is grateful to have a car doesn't undo the fact that she had to deal with the hassle of dealing with what happened to her after that minor car accident. So yes, practice gratitude, but not as a way of nullifying your emotions and your experience. The holidays also teach us about overcoming adversity. That even when we face seemingly insurmountable obstacles, we can find the strength to persevere and ultimately triumph over challenges. That is the message of, you know, most religious holidays. Definitely Easter, definitely Passover. Also, it teaches us about responsibility. With freedom comes responsibility, and we need to call on ourselves to use our freedoms wisely to work towards making the world a better place for all of us, I think. Better place for you and a better place for the people you know. We have a responsibility to ourselves and to each other. That's another lesson of these holidays. Also, faith. The holidays remind us to strengthen our faith, strengthen our belief in something greater than ourselves. It reminds us to have hope in the face of adversity and to trust that everything will work out in the end. Even when things are hopeless or seem hopeless, holding on to our faith, our belief, our conviction that things can change, that sustains us through the darkest moments. And by the way, faith doesn't have to be religious. It just means believing and trusting in something or someone, including ourselves. So this type of faith means approaching life with positivity and resilience, even when things are tough. It's about believing in yourself, believing in your ability to overcome obstacles, as well as being able to take risks and pursue your goals despite any setbacks. So, you know, whether religious or secular, faith is a source of comfort in difficult times. It helps you stay optimistic and hopeful, and it helps you keep moving forward. There's a great saying from, what is that movie? The Best Little Magnolia Hotel, whatever the movie is about this hotel of a bunch of British people who moved to India to this Magnolia Hotel or whatever. It was such a cute movie. So heartwarming, so endearing. I can't believe I'm spacing out on the name of it. But at some point in this movie, one of the characters says to the other, everything is going to be okay in the end. If it is not okay, it is not the end. Don't you love that? I just love that. Okay, that's faith. That's faith right there. Also, unity. The Passover Seder and the Easter brunch, as well as breaking the Ramadan fast, it's a time when families and communities come together to celebrate and reflect. And that highlights the importance of togetherness. And it reminds us that we all need to support and care for one another, especially in challenging times. We all just went through a pandemic. Well, I guess we're still kind of in it, but not like we were. We went through this and we learned the importance of unity and togetherness. And that is just, it's so important. When we feel connected to others, we feel more capable of getting through. And when we feel more capable of getting through, and when we support ourselves, we don't need to use food to escape, comfort, distract, all the things that it does. Also, the holidays are about hope. They're about the power of hope, the power of tenacity and belief. And they remind us that even in the darkest times, there is hope. There is hope for a brighter future. We can begin again. And generosity, we need to give back. Ramadan especially encourages Muslims to be generous, to be charitable. I mean, I think all faiths do, particularly to people in need. And this can be applied to our modern life by finding ways to give back to our community, volunteering, donating, just being kind to others. And that includes being kind to ourselves. The key to changing your relationship with food, by the way, is changing your relationship with yourself. Because when you are nice to yourself, when you support yourself, when you can acknowledge the parts of yourself that you like and appreciate, along with the parts of yourself that you are maybe working to change, you feel good overall. And when you feel good overall and you're supportive and kind and generous to yourself, and you're encouraging and loving to yourself, you don't need food as a distraction. Yes, that sounds simple, and it is not simple to create that change. It is not simple to create the change in the way that you respond to yourself. It is not easy. It is hard. It is a lot easier to count calories, carbs, and fat grams and macros and, you know, how many times are you going to the gym. It's a lot easier to weigh yourself than to look on what's weighing on you. It's a lot easier to focus on what you're eating than to look at what's eating at you. But if you just focus on what you're eating, if you just focus on what you weigh and not what's going on within, nothing ever changes. The good news is that when you do the work of looking inward, of changing your relationship with yourself, of realizing that you don't know even what you're feeling, or you're toxic to yourself and you're mean to yourself, which of course makes you want to escape yourself with food. When you change that, when you become encouraging and generous and kind to yourself, then binge eating is a thing of the past. It's something that you used to do. It's not something that you are having to deal with forever. It's not about being in recovery, right? Being in recovery means you wake up every day and you have to think about, okay, I'm going to be good today. It means white knuckling it. That's no good. Who wants to wake up every day and white knuckle it and think about being good? And being good, by the way, is like not being a good, you know, moral person. It means eating salad instead of pizza. So that's being in recovery. I don't believe in being in recovery. As you know, if you're a longtime listener to the show, or if you're brand new to it, hear this. No, I don't believe in recovery. I believe in liberation. Believe in waking up and thinking about your day, not your diet. It really is possible to do that. It really is possible to say, you know what, that binge eating, emotional eating, whatever I did with food that was problematic and caused me pain, that's something I used to do. I don't do that anymore, and I don't feel the need to ever, because I am healed and I changed my relationship to me, which means everything changed. That is what we're after. All right, I digressed back to holiday meals. So when you look at the themes of the holidays, these are all powerful reminders that allow us to have like hope in the face of adversity, to have faith in our ability to overcome all challenges, even the challenge of our challenging relationship with ourselves. And so those are just several of the ways to get through holiday meals without emotional eating. Because when we allow ourselves to eat all foods in moderation, we can make more balanced choices. When we learn to speak up for ourselves and set limits, set boundaries, that is empowering. And that leads to us feeling more at ease and more protected at these family gatherings. And by celebrating the spirit of the holiday, we can, or holidays, whatever, or however many of these holidays you're celebrating, we can enjoy the tradition of the holiday, the festivity of the holiday, without sacrificing our mental or physical health. So that is how to survive the holidays, whether it's Easter or Passover or both, or Ramadan or whatever other holiday you may be celebrating right now. There are ways to get through it without worrying about food or family or people. There are ways that you can be with yourself, take yourself to these gatherings, be your own best friend, be kind, and you're going to have a whole different experience. Okay, So that is my topic for today. If you are interested in calling in, because we still have about 15 minutes, the number here is 323-203-0815. Call in and let me know what's eating at you, what's weighing on you, what's on your mind. I'm here to help. If you're on Instagram and you have any question or comment, please drop it in the comment box. And while I wait for anyone to do that, I'm going to get to a question from before. All right. So here's a question, a very broad question. Why can't I stop eating? Right? So simple, so relatable. Why can't I stop eating? Meaning, you know, binging, I think. Okay. So the next time you head to the kitchen or order DoorDash or wherever it is that you're getting food, the drive-thru, ask yourself, why? Why? What is this doing for me? What problem is this resolving for me? This is when you know that you're not eating out of physical hunger, but you're eating out of emotional hunger. So physical hunger is you feel physically hungry and you're eating because you're hungry and there's no like shame involved in that. Emotional hunger is when you eat something because, oh, you can't resist it, or it sounds good, or you're going to eat it because it's going to change the way you emotionally feel, or you just can't stop thinking about it. That's emotional hunger. It's located in your mind, not your body. You have a hungry heart, not a hungry body. So ask yourself, why? What problem is this solving for me? What will I not feel if I go focus on food or eat or think about my weight or all of the things? Because if we're focusing on food, if we're eating, if we're focusing on our weight, if we're having all of these thoughts, it takes us away from other thoughts that we maybe don't want to get in touch with. No? An example of this is my very first group when I was a brand new therapist, the one where famously on the first day, the one woman looked at me and said, "What's a skinny bitch like you know about binging?" That group. One of the women in the group was just very steadfast in the idea that she didn't have any other emotional conflicts or issues or feelings or anything like that. It was just about food. Her problem was food. It was food, 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 food. And on the very last day, like maybe 20 minutes before the end of the last day of this group, she said that if she wasn't thinking about food, if she wasn't thinking about this 20 pounds that she wanted to lose, because that was all that was on her mind all the time, she admitted that if she were not thinking about that 20 pounds and about food, she might be thinking that she wanted to leave her husband. Right? So that's a very extreme and powerful and poignant example of how we use thoughts of food to distract from other thoughts we don't want to have anything to do with. It was easier for her to obsess over her weight and about food than it was for her to realize she was not happy in her marriage. So what is it? It doesn't have to be as extreme as that, but what is it that you're not thinking about? If you're thinking about food, ask yourself that. Be curious, not critical. What problem is this food going to solve for me? Also, check in with yourself. What's going on with you? Do you need comfort? Do you need distraction? Are you lonely? Are you angry? What's going on with you? Why? Why is the biggest question you can ask? And then when you identify the why, which is challenging, it's also why I talk about the food mood formula, which I talk about in my book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating. In this book, I talk about different ways that you can figure out what's eating at you. Because often we go so quickly to food, we don't even realize we're being triggered by a situation. We're triggered, but we're unconscious to that. We don't realize that. We just think about food. Before we realize that we're activated, before we realize that we're triggered by a situation, we go to food to distract ourselves. So, the food mood formula will help you identify really what's eating at you. What is the need, the feeling, the conflict that is going on within? And once you identify that, then it's time to express it, right? Now, here's where a lot of people get stuck. They identify it and they confuse identifying it with feeling it. Identifying it is just an intellectual exercise. Oh, I'm angry. Oh, I'm sad. Oh, I feel, I'm upset. Oh, I'm lonely. Right? That's just a cognitive exercise. It's insight. That's all it is. It's just insight. It doesn't on its own, doesn't do anything for you. What you have to do next is you have to express it. Right? I'm sad because of this, that, and the other. I'm upset because of this happened. I'm angry at this person or situation. I'm scared and anxious about this or that. I'm scared and anxious about, let's just, flying. I'm trying to think of things that people have said to me recently. I'm scared and anxious about flying. And for this person, by the way, so she recognized she was scared and anxious about flying. I'm scared of having, so when she started to then get into it, was like, I'm scared of not having control. I feel like bad things will happen to me if I can't, fly the plane. I can't trust that people can look after me. I'm worried that something bad is going to happen. Anyway, so she just expressed all of this. And by the way, all of these fears were related to not having control and to having two people in charge of her well-being, which unconsciously brought up her experience of her childhood in which the original pilot and co-pilot, her parents, didn't pilot the plane of life very effectively and were very chaotic and unstable. And so she unconsciously brought this experience of her childhood to these two people who were flying the plane. And that created a lot of her anxiety. So she was able to not only name it, but recognize the underpinnings to it. And then the next step is to respond to yourself. Right? So first you identify it, you express it, then you respond to it. That's where you validate and acknowledge and reassure yourself. So yes, I am scared to fly. Of course I am. It's bringing up this feeling of not being able to trust people to look after my basic safety, not paying attention. Some terrible things happened while my parents were at the helm of my life. And that's getting triggered and activated. And then you reassure yourself. But this plane is not my childhood. These people are very interested in keeping the plane up in the air and landing it and taking off and landing safely. They are trained. They have hours and hours of experience. Flying is safer than driving. And feel better. Right? So you have to like it's a whole process. It's more than identifying it. It's then expressing it and responding to yourself. Also, give yourself what you really need. If you're hungry and you're physically hungry, yeah, go eat something. Eat something nutritious. But if you're tired, don't go eat something. Lots of people eat when they're tired. They fight being tired and they eat something sugary so that they have more, more energy and they feel guilty. Instead of that, or they're anxious and they eat to sedate themselves. Right? These are two ways that people use food for purposes other physical purposes other than what they truly need. If you're tired, you need to rest. If you're all revved up, you need to do calming exercises, not have a bunch of carbs that have a sedative effect. Give yourself what you really need. If you're lonely, reach out and connect with someone. No matter what time it is, there's always someone online. You know, maybe it's not someone that you know very well, or maybe it's not someone you know. But for example, in my Food for Thought community on Facebook, if you're not a member, please join it. Just look for Dr. Nina's Food for Thought community. There are people all over the world. So no matter where you are, if you're going through something, you can post and say, hey, I'm struggling. And chances are someone's going to be there for you and say, hey, talk to me here. So give yourself what you really need. Also, as I was saying before, so important to turn your critic into a friend. Sometimes we binge just to get away from our own mean voice. What is the saying? You know, if you talk to your friends the way you talk to your body, you'd have no friends left. That's a quote by Marsha Hutchinson, who's a body image expert. If you talk to your friends like you talk to your body, you'd have no friends left. That's right. So be a friend to yourself. Don't talk to yourself in a harsh, critical, mean way. If you wouldn't say it to someone you care about and love, do not say it to yourself. Gotta show up for yourself, because if not, food takes care of you. Food takes care of you. It gives you comfort. It gives you distraction. It fills the void if you're lonely, if you're empty. It does so much. It's a friend. It's also an enemy. It's a frenemy. But give yourself what you really need by being a friend to yourself, and you will feel better. And if you feel powerless over food, consider what in your life are you feeling powerless over? Often we displace it. We feel powerless in certain areas of our lives, but instead of feeling powerless and helpless, which is a horrible feeling, nobody wants to feel powerless and helpless, we may focus on food. Oh, I feel powerless and helpless over food. I'm not thinking about this other area in my life that I don't have any control over. And then it just becomes you and food. And it's a displacement. So instead of, oh, I have no control in my life, or I have no control in this part of my life, it's I have no control over food, but I could. Because you could ostensibly have control over food. That's what we tell ourselves, even though this is not about control. So get curious. What is going on? What is it that you really, really need? What are the true feelings, conflicts? What's happening within? That's where you need to really focus your attention. Getting curious. So let me just recap that, because I just told you a lot. Remember, there are hidden reasons why we turn to food. Sometimes we are consciously aware of it, and sometimes we're not. So we think we're being triggered by food. No, we're often being triggered by a situation, and food is the solution to some real trigger, which is some emotion, some thought, some situation, something that's stirring us up and activating us that we don't want to go anywhere near that. So instead we turn to food. What's in the kitchen? People often say to me, why is it that I am fine during the day, but at night I just can't stay out of the kitchen? I have dinner and everything. I'm fine. I'm not hungry at all. But as soon as dinner is over, I keep going back in there. I can't stay out of the kitchen. Why? Because during the day, we're distracted. We're doing things. We're busy. Our minds are occupied by all the things that we're doing. But at night, we're not so busy. We're more aware of thoughts, emotions, ideas that can come creeping into our minds at night that might be scary, might make us uncomfortable, maybe things that we don't want to look at, like the woman who was so obsessed about the 20 pounds and food and all of that. She did not want to look at the fact that maybe she was unhappy in her marriage and possibly wanted to leave her husband. It was much easier for her to focus on food than to focus on what was eating at her, which was this very significant thought that scared her. So that's why food is often a problem at night. So you want to, instead of being afraid of it, they're just thoughts. Just what are the thoughts? Doesn't mean you have to act on them. What are the feelings? What are the thoughts? Get more curious and know you can survive this. Whatever it is that you are feeling, you will be okay. You will get past it. You will be better for it. You will be living a more authentic life. If you can identify what's going on, respond to yourself in a kind, supportive, loving way, you feel better. When you feel better, you don't need food to cope. That's how it works. Yes, easier said than done, but possible. So thank you for tuning in. I'm Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, psychoanalyst, here to help you create a binge-free, happy life. I'm here every Wednesday on LA Talk Radio at 11 a.m. Pacific, or you can listen later wherever you get podcasts. And for a deeper dive on this topic and many others, check out my book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating, available on Amazon in every format, including audiobook, where I read it to you. Have a very happy holiday, and I'll see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.